Okay, so first, I just want to add one detail to yesterday, which I really just can't resist adding. This is also synergy, or I don't know what you want to call it, but this is seems kind of totally random. So I was looking at an article about Hezekiah, and it just happens as a particularly fascinating article. It's not one that I'm going to speak about today. It's one that hopefully we'll have a chance to look at a little bit in the future. Really, really fascinating discussion. But I couldn't help but notice that it's an article in a journal. It's actually in a letter section of a journal. And immediately before the part I was looking at, the whole idea of Hezekiah is looking a little bit beyond what you're supposed to be looking at in front of you. So immediately before, so there was a piece about a topic that we spoke about yesterday with a little bit of a addition to what we spoke about yesterday. So can't resist sharing it with you. We should just to round out the topic. Yesterday we spoke tangentially about Gezel Shena. We talked about the category of Hezekiah of these things which are called Hezek, called Gezel, called things of that nature, but may or may not fit the actual parameters of the concepts they're named after. We don't know to what extent Hezekiah is a Hezek in the Hezekian sense. We don't know to what extent Gezel Shena is a Gezel in the Gezela sense, or it's a real din. So in that context, we mentioned yesterday that two of the explanations of Gezel Shena was that it's a Nos Dvarim. You're causing emotional distress, which, as we noted, could also be an aspect of Hezekiah. Or we mentioned the position of Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg that it is even more comparable to Hezekiah in that essentially it has an indirect impact on one's ability to make a living. That the same way that if I am spying on you when you want to be doing work in your field, and that compromises your ability to make the money you want to make, so that somehow traces back to me. To what degree, that's a question, but it somehow traces back to me. So Reb Zalman Nechemya suggested that so too, if I disturb your sleep and I keep you from getting a good night's rest, so then I'm somehow the cause, whether I'm liable in the literal sense is a question, but I'm somehow the cause of you are not making money that you need to make. So I'll just read you this short paragraph. And he just randomly came across in this letter column here in this journal. So he writes here, V'chein ro'isi ma'shakasav ha'gayin Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg. So I saw what Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg said. Shema sha'amri inshi, sheyesh gezel shena, was that? So what people have the habit of saying, amri inshi, that there is a notion of gezel shena, hu davar she'en lo shoresh. It's something, it doesn't have an actual source. Ella Shamri and Shikane, just that people say it. People say, sorry, people say that there is such a thing. And I wanted to point out, Polo. So there is such a thing written in the Sefer Chofetz Chaim and his deeds, his activities. Gimel Kofay, Bezahalashim. So this Chofetz Chaim is Chaim to be a thief, mimenu es that he took his rest. Zohi gezela hashava. And this is a gezeila that you can't give back. And there's no concept of returning it. Okay, so what was written, but I believe where Bzam Nechemya wrote, that it doesn't seem to be a reason to call it gezel. So, okay, so it means that it's a borrowed term in this area that we talk about gezel in this non-material. this non-material context. So just one more position on that question. But it adds to this whole issue of these extra offenses, which may not necessarily follow the entire set of parameters of a given concept, whether it's Gezel, Geneva, Hezek, whatever it is, but nonetheless have an offense that is attached to them, and that has to be considered. Okay, so far so good. Fine. So now let's consider a question, which is a highly complex question. And let's try to appreciate the various nuances we came up to this point yesterday. It has to do with the question of what role does Mechila play in the context of Hezekriya? To what extent does an individual saying, it's okay, I'm fine, I waive my rights, to what extent is that a thing, is that a concept that's applicable when it comes to Hezekriya? So one source that I didn't put on this morning, because you've seen it already, I put it on earlier, but we'll look at it together today because it's one of the very crucial sources, is the Rush in Siman Beis. And let's try together to try to understand it as best we can. But as you'll recall, if you remember from back then, that the Rush takes up this question. And it's a question that's affected by what we laid out yesterday. So just to go over the basic territory, we try to understand what's the nature of the offense of Hezekriya. And not necessarily assuming that there's one answer to that, that there could be various components. But among the components, there was the issue of a psychic pain, of an emotional impact that comes when someone is being spied, when somebody's looking at you. And second to that, we talked about the reality that one's productivity is compromised by the fact that there are people looking at him, and comparable to what we just said about Zalman Dechemya and Gezel Shena, that it is a causational impact that happens to his bottom line, that happens to his ability to make money. So we started to focus on yesterday. So what's the difference between the two? So one, there could be a number of differences. One major difference there could be is that there is essentially a major ramification for the realm of Mechila. That we know that Mechila is a concept that applies to rights. And again, by Mechila, we're not talking about Mechila after the fact. If I hurt your feelings and I come to ask you for Mechila, it's a different kind of Mechila. Here, we're talking about Mechila before the fact. If I say to you, I know that I have the right to get such and such treatment from you, but I'm Meichel. I don't need it. So does that take effect? So it's a complex question because in theory it does. Right? But there are limitations. And there are limitations especially when personal pain is involved. And you see that distinction in a few areas. So one way you see the distinction is the Mishnah and the Gemara in Bava Kamma that I gave you to look at this morning, in the middle of the morning. But that Gemara draws a distinction that if one tells somebody else to inflict some loss on them, and the person does it, so just because the victim said do it doesn't get him off the hook. But what if the victim said, I'm making the condition with you that you will be off the hook? So then there is a distinction that's drawn between material harm and personal harm, at least personal injury. Gemara gets into discussion if there's a difference between pain and that which actually causes disfigurement or actual physical injury. But clearly there is at least the assumption that if you're talking about actually damaging the limb of a person, let's say, so then that's not going to be subject to mechila. And that's something which has to be factored in here. So this distinction between your property and yourself is going to be important in terms of trying to understand how Hezek Re'iyah plays out. Similarly, the Gemara in the second parak introduces the whole concept of Harchakas Nezikin. The idea that the way I situate my property and my activities has to take into consideration what impact it has on you. And there is a distinction drawn between that which may compromise your material benefits, which is more malleable, and that which actually causes you personal suffering. Like if it blows smoke into your property or a terrible odor into your property. So how do you understand Hezek Re'iyah on that kind of a rubric? We're going to draw these distinctions. How do you understand Hezek Re'iyah? And we also need to highlight that if we were to say that if I tell you you can break my arm and you'll be putter, it doesn't take. So why is that? The idea that there's a limitation when personal suffering is involved, why is that limitation there? Well, how would you explain it? What's the difference? By my property, I can say it's all right, but by my body, I can't. How do you understand the difference? Anyone want to help me out?
Because maybe you belong to Hashem as opposed to like your property belongs to you.
Okay, that's an important point that I was making. It's actually on top of it because it's certainly very true. Right? So, and it's something we can't ignore. And the Gemara that we're talking about here is at the end of Parak HaChovel. That parak in Bava Kamma that talks about personal injury, if you learn Bava Kamma. So the first half of it is about damage to physical property, to property, to material property. And then there's one parak called the Chovel, which is about damage to the body. And there the Gemara makes clear that there is a prohibition of Chovel Ba'atzmo. Right, that you're not the bialim on your own body. So you're right that that's an element that we can't ignore here. That's definitely a part of the issue. So that's something we shouldn't set aside too much. It highlights that there's going to be an isser involved. There's going to be something wrong involved because the person can't even do it to himself. And there's all kinds of practical shilas that come up because of that, because involving issues like elective surgery, that cosmetic surgery, things like that, cosmetic surgery. So the question of what justifies and what not, you know, it's a discussion also just to make a little bit of a Parsha connection. So one of the major questions that the Sfarim talk about in this week's Parsha is if Avraham Avinu fulfilled all the mitzvos before the Torah was given, so why didn't he do Bris Milah on his own? Why did he wait for God to command him? He should have figured it out on his own. So there are a lot of answers to that question, but one of the suggestions the Sfarim have is that it would have been an act of chavala, would have been an act of self-wounding that would not have been justified until there was actually a commandment. So your point is very well taken. It's something that should not be ignored, that the issue that your body is not simply yours to do whichever you want is certainly an element here. But that addresses really the propriety of it, whether this is something anyone should be doing. And by the way, you know, there's something that ties in as well. There's a tshuva that Rav Unterman, who was the chief rabbi of Israel way back when, he has a tshuva about whether there is a heter in Judaism for boxing. which is related to a tshuva of the Rash that we'll hopefully talk about today also, maybe you got a chance to see. But it draws on that question as well, that can somebody say, listen, it's okay, punch me, I'm fine with it. So that's certainly an element. But here we're not focusing on that in this Mishnah. It's focusing on the victim saying, I'm okay with it. So whether you have a liability towards the victim. So if we say that you still do, even though he said it's okay with it, so why should that be true? There's two elements here. So see this, I saw Ari had a hand up before, a physical hand. I see Zach has a virtual hand up, so another rules of Kadima. So Ari, you still have a comment?
No, I was going to say, what's it called? What Abby was going to say.
Okay. But, Zach?
I mean, maybe we could say that you're like so attached to your own physical being that there is no concept of mechila by yourself. Like, as opposed to things that are someone, like secondary.
Easy for someone raising a digital hand to say.
Yes. Whereas maybe like, let's say something secondary to you, like an object, there you can have mechila because they are, yes, you're connected to it, but it's a secondary connection. Whereas, you know, my hand is, I mean, maybe not my virtual hand, but you know, my bodily hand is my hand, you know, sort of, it's so much a part of me that I can't, like there, it, even if I'm calling it, like, the mechila is, like, automatically void, in a way.
I think you need to spell that out a little bit, because void, so what if it's blind? So why does that void the mechila?
Because you just, it's like, it's, I would say it's, like, so much, like you are so much in your physical body, you know, as much as maybe at the end of the day, we, you know, this is maybe getting into like what's the difference between like the guf and the neshama a little bit. But I think the main point being is that like we only allow mechila for things that are not inherently you. Like an object, like my shovel is not inherently Zachary Beer. But my hand is inherently Zachary Beer. Even if I cut off my own hand, it would still be my hand. It would be my hand that I cut off, but it would still be my hand.
You know, it's interesting because you're getting into major philosophical territories. A lot of discussion about that nowadays, because especially with artificial intelligence, takes it in the whole other world. But the idea that so much of the body can be replaced by prosthetics and by cybernetics. So how much of you can you lose and still be you? Is
the itself. Famous question, no?
Sorry?
The famous philosophical question.
Yeah.
Boats, you know what I'm talking ship, about?
Right.
But, ship of, yeah.
Right. So that's itself a question, but especially when dealing with a human being, right? The issue of to what extent are you still yourself? So that's a very important point, although I think we need to flesh out a little bit why that matters. And if that matters, Max, you want to come? You have now both hands up, so that.
Yeah, it's double. Sorry, I guess I took over Alexander. Alexander Sams, I was up first. If he wants to take it first, I wouldn't want to push through.
No, go ahead.
Okay, it's beautiful. Basically, Mikdash is going to be built right there in the digital space between those two boxes.
In the digital space, so I mean, in the real one though. But which one's the real one? But I want to just ask, maybe we went over this, but it might have just been a point that I missed. Was not the scenarios given already related to giving mechila to things that weren't our own property? Like, and on top of that, like the shirt brought up by the rush is not our body, and you're not allowed to do mechila to that. Or in the very least, you can give it, but you could always take it back. So it's inherently not really mechila. And the hezekria, I guess that is our body, and according to the rush, you can give mechila for that though.
So it makes us confused a little bit.
Yeah, I just wanted to, like, while we're speaking about this, I just wanted to bring it up in case maybe
I'm highlighting the question. Yeah. Okay, Al, what did you want to say?
The Rashba kind of answers that question: why you can't be mochel on your limbs or extremities, and that to make a claim like that. To say, yes, you can cut off my arm, you must be saying it out of pain or anger, and it can't be treated like a full decision.
Oh, okay. So that's definitely an element here, and that's something that we need to appreciate. The Rashba does indeed spell that out. The truth is, one gets the impression already from the Gemara, right? And the Gemara has that somewhat poetic phrasing, you know, yesh lav shehu kehein vehein shehu kelav. Right? There are some yeses that are really no's and some no's that are really yeses. So in other words, that we have to be able to know that if you say something, it's genuine. Even though from a halachic perspective, the Gemara does say elsewhere that dvarim shebelev einam dvarim, that which is just internal doesn't have significance, especially when it contradicts that which is stated. But there are limits to that. And that's something which needs to be appreciated, that you can't just satisfy yourself with extracting a just formal kind of agreement, which may not be genuine, but the premise that somebody is mochel, you have to be able to rely on, is the genuine mechil. So I think that's the point that I was saying that essentially that is the major element that seems to emerge from the Bava Kamma passage. That we do not assume that the mechila is genuine, even if the words are there. The concepts in second parak of Bava Basra about the odor and the smoke and the like, so that seems to bring up another element, that even if one might have thought they were sincere, but the nature of personal suffering is unpredictable. So one might think that he's okay with something, and it turns out he's really not okay. Turns out that he thought he could handle it, then he could. So if that's the case, so maybe the halacha is telling us that we're not going to hold you to it. Now, this addresses two different aspects of the experience. It also addresses the fact that there are different components here. So in Bava Kamma, we're talking about compensation after the fact, which really focuses on a different aspect. While above the Basra, we're talking about allowing somebody to continue behaving in a certain fashion. But nonetheless, this is two elements of the story. Just to give you a little preview, Purim is still a way off, but I guess there's Hanukkah to go in between. But like we saw before Tishrei, so we try, when we talk about the Yom Tovim, we try to find overlaps between the Masechta and the calendar so that we can maximize our synergy. So if it were Purim this week, if we had the timing a little bit better, so if it were Purim this week, I would address with you guys the following topic. And in order to benefit to the extent that we can, I will give you half of it. So it'll be a preview. So the topic I would discuss with you, if we're Purim this week, would be, are Purim spiels permitted? Now, spoiler alert, and this is also a casualty of COVID at the moment, because many of you have not been in yeshiva long enough to know this because of the recent situation. But one would imagine, spoiler alert, that the answer is yes. That my answer would be yes, because our yeshiva has a very prominent tradition of Purim shpils. Unfortunately, the past 2 years hasn't happened. So those of you who haven't been here long enough have not witnessed the YU Purim Spiel. But before two years ago and going back many decades, so there is quite a tradition of Purim Spiels in our Beis Medrash with the participation of the Rosh Yeshiva. So in the halachic literature, there are many concerns that are raised about permspiels, as you could imagine. That there's a lot to wonder about why they should be permitted. And you can imagine the issues, right? So without going into the details, and hopefully in a few months, they'll be happy to go into many more details about this. But ostensibly, it seems like faculty members, Rebbeim, Talmidei Chachamim, are being satirized, are being made fun of in the context of these spiels. And one would imagine that that would be pretty inappropriate from a normal halachic perspective. So that being the case, so why should it be mutter? So again, I'm happy to go into much more detail about this in a few months. But just to highlight the issue for what's relevant today, so one might say that, and the truth is, actually, Purim time, we may know a lot more about Baba Basra that might be relevant to that topic. So hopefully it'll be even better times. But some would assume, I think if you'd ask the average person in the streets, or the average person in the Beis Medrash better, right, if you'd ask the average person in the OIU Beis Medrash more than 2 years ago, now, why was that mutter? They went to the Purim Spiel, and they saw all the Rosh Yeshiva sitting in a circle around the performers. And they saw the performers imitate the various Rebbeim and others. Why was that mutter? So I would imagine that probably the most common answer to those who would agree that it was mutter, because in the Sfarim, by the way, you could find many poskim who write, that is absolutely not. Right, this is certainly a difference of approach and tradition in various places. And in the written literature, you will find much more against the Purim Spiels. So why is it tolerated in our yeshiva? So what would you guess the answer might be most likely to be? Probably a one-word answer. Maybe?
It's mechila.
Mechila, right? I think that would be the most common answer. Listen, they're all sitting there, right? They're all witnessing and participating and laughing. And apparently they're moichel. So I think that would be the most common answer instinctively people would say. I'll say for now is I think it's an inadequate answer. I'm not going to tell you today what I think the real answer is, that you have to wait till Purim time or read Zach's post in the chat. But I'm not going to say what I think the actual answer is right now, but just to explain why it's not a good enough answer. So what's wrong with that answer? So based on what we've seen so far, you may have a little bit of a sense. Now you may have a little bit of a clue as to why I think that answer is inadequate for this question. So to appreciate that, if you had a chance to see, I think I put it at the end of the list today, so you may not have gotten to it. But there's a basis for it. It's not just people's guess that you do find this principle in Hilchos Purim, in the Ramon, Aruch Chaim, and you find it in other contexts also, in the Halachos of Simchas Chasim Vekala, celebrating at weddings. That there is a notion of mechila that does get expressed there. It says that in celebrating on Purim or at a wedding, that there is an attitude that many rely on of mechila when it comes to property damage. So if there's a little bit of wine spilled on the carpet at a Purim party, so the general minig, or at least what it sounds like from that Rama, is you don't sue the guy in Besdin to pay for the cleaning costs. There are a lot of caveats to that also. distinction drawn between a little damage and a lot of damage. And again, a question like we talked about yesterday of what's the proper approach, lots of Sadeh Shamayim, but at least on a very basic technical level, there is an assumption of Mechila. And by the way, just to address another possible misconception, because this is very important, that in Hilchos Nezikin in general, so there are Gemaras that say that if somebody is running around on Erev Shabbos or the like, that they are putter from some damages that they may cause because rats perishus, because they were pursuing the mitzvah of preparing for Shabbos. So therefore, they are off the hook. So it's a hotly debated topic because it creates the impression that, okay, there's this mitzvah exemption, which could easily go off the rails, right? It could easily be abused to say that if you're on the way to do a mitzvah, you're putter from all nezikin. So I saw in one sefer that described, as you can imagine, everyone's basically going to have to walk around in armor because who knows, maybe somebody's on the way to a bris or on the way to a shir and they're going to run them over. And what's the consequence going to be? They'll be off the hook because of that. So it's hard to understand how there could be this broad exemption for somebody who's pursuing a mitzvah. So there are many who explain that it doesn't mean that you're off the hook when you're pursuing a mitzvah generally. It means that when there's a joint communal mitzvah, or when it's Erev Shabbos and everybody's running around because it's Erev Shabbos, everyone knows what the atmosphere is like on Erev Shabbos. So then that creates an elevated level of self-responsibility that you have to understand that the streets are more crowded and more hectic on Erev Shabbos than they are on a Tuesday morning. And that creates a shared environment that's different. But just because you're involved in a mitzvah doesn't necessarily get you off the hook. And in a similar vein, that the idea that if you're involved in Simchas Purim or Simchas Chasim Mekala and you cause a little damage, so that's not because all you're doing a mitzvah. It's because people understand they're all in it together. They're all celebrating Purim together. So there is a mechila. I know that if I invite you over to my house for a Purim party, but you know that I'm going to sue you if you drop a little drop of wine on the carpet, so no one's going to have any fun. And presumably we want to be able to enjoy the party. So it's not going to work if there's this tremendous kpeda on all of the nuances of Hilchos Nezek and Geneva, or Gezel, I'll just say. That's actually a topic we can come back to in a later discussion. So yes, there is precedent for this, right? So to say, like Levi said, okay, so Purim Shpils, Mechila, right? Just look at the Ramah, there it is. Mechila. The problem is it the same? Right? Can we say that if the Rama says there's mechila when you spill wine on the carpet on Purim, so is there also mechila when you embarrass somebody in the Purim spiel? What would you say? Do they fit neatly into each other? Maybe you're raising hand.
I mean, yeah, because like when someone spills wine, it's not like they intended to spill wine.
Mm-hmm.
But during a refurbished field, the whole idea is that you're trying to say something that is going to make people laugh. And people generally, like, there's more intent in a refurbished field than there is.
Well, okay, so that's very interesting because you're opening up a whole other path, which is not where I was going to go now, but it's important. I hope that's not true. I hope that what you're saying is not true. That I mean, it could be, but I hope that it's not, because if it is, then, you know.
I think it's like people are trying to hurt other people in the Purim spiel. It's that there's more of an element of intent in making it than there is spilling wine on a carpet accidentally.
So I hope, though, yeah, I mean, there is intent for sure, but I hope that there's a big line between the intent to make the audience laugh and God forbid, the intent to hurt the feelings of the person who's betrayed. So, but if there is, and who knows, you know, sometimes people are complicated, then that would certainly introduce a very scary element. But that aside, because that's something to really worry about, but I think the major distinction here is we're not just talking about property. So you spill some wine on my, by the way, when I keep using wine, so I'm not taking sides here on the whole wine on perm question. So you spill soda, whatever it is, on my carpet. So, okay, so it's a cleaning bill. Fine. So I can be mochel on a cleaning bill. Right? I can say, yes, whatever it costs me, I'm not going to charge you. I can be mochel on that. It's money. We know I can be mochel on money. The question is, the embarrassment that I may have being portrayed in the perm spiel, is that the same? So what we're seeing here from the sources we've talked about today is that it's very possibly not the same. And these two elements that we just mentioned are both very relevant to the perm spiel. So first and probably foremost, that the idea of mechila, I would not rely on that. I think there's an element of that, the perm spiel. I think it's important that that be there as well. Right? Because certainly, for example, I've had this experience too, that if a person says, I refuse to be portrayed in the perm spiel, so then one should not. You know, that I think the idea that there is some presumption of mechila is also a part of it. But I'm just saying it's not enough. So why is it not enough? So first of all, the first element that we spoke about is, what about the very strong possibility that it's not sincere? Which is a very, very real possibility. Right? You can just understand, right? Especially if everyone else is being a good sport and being portrayed, and you're going to be the one to be the stick in the mud and say, no, I refuse to be a character. So there's a lot of social pressure that goes along with that. And you see that everyone else is laughing along with the jokes, and you're the one who's going to sit there scowling. So what are people going to think of you? So there is a very strong pressure to say you're okay with it when you are not okay with it. And it's actually a much more realistic example than what we saw here in the Mishnah Bava Kamma, which is kind of a very unusual kind of case. But the notion that in the Purim spiel, somebody will say, oh yeah, of course, yeah. Then when they really don't mean it and they're really dying inside, is a very likely possibility. So Rav Avinair talks about this in one of his Sfarim. As I say, for on Lashon Hara, he talks about that specific reality. But that's certainly the question of whether the mechila is genuine. We have to really worry about totally relying on that. Again, the mechila, you want the mechila, but to totally rely on it and say, okay, I got mechila, I'm golden, because he signed a waiver, so he can't sue me because I have the legal waiver here. I would say that's a very, very shaky ground. But on top of that, there's also this other element that we referenced here, that maybe it was genuine, but you could also easily imagine, right, somebody who thinks he's genuinely Michael, and then he shows up at the spiel, and then he sees the particular joke they're making, and he turns red, and then everyone laughs louder, and then he turns redder, and then keeps going and getting worse and worse. And then afterwards, he's screaming, as you can imagine, yeah, I said I was Michael. Didn't think you were going to do that. You know, I thought that it was, I thought it was something normal. I thought I could handle it, but you know, just sitting there and watching everybody laugh at me. And so there is this element that when it involves personal suffering, so then even if the mechila were expressed, you can never hold the party to it. And if you can't hold them to it, so then you're doing it at your own risk. Right, it may still end up on your cheshbon, even though you got the signed mechila from this person in advance. Okay, so with all that, right? So with all that introduction, so now the few minutes that we have left, so what about what the sources tell us about Mechila by Hezek Riyah, right? Having framed the issue as we have now, now hopefully we're well prepared to jump into it. So what the major source that we've seen, the Rush, what does he say about Mechila by Hezek Riyah? Anyone want to help me out? What does the Rush say? This is the Rush and Siman Beis. Yeah, let's look at it together.
Was this the first Rush that we looked at, or today's Rush? Because I actually didn't get a chance to see the Rush that you shared.
Yeah, this previously. Is the first Rush. I didn't put it on today's list because it's been on there for a while. So
yeah, okay. No, but so we're talking about the Rush on his feelings of Mechila. The way that he felt about Mechila was that Mechila did not work unless it was in the within the context of, at least related to Hezek Riyah, was not did not work unless it was within the context of a Beis Din and Maiden.
Okay, right. That condition was important, right? That there has to really be proof that there actually was Mechila, right? So he requires the Eidim. So that could easily get lost. That's an important point. But that once you do, if you could establish that there was genuine Mechila, so then, at least in the context of the Mishnah here, which is always important to stress in these sugyas, because there could be a variable between any two cases. But in the context of the law in the Mishnah, so the Rash writes that Mechila should take effect. Now, we just have a few minutes here, but just to highlight that this is important because there are a number of other issues that are going to come up that we'll talk about next that seem to have common elements to everything that we're talking about. So everything that we've discussed today, which addresses this issue of Mechila, but it has common aspects that could lead us into other seemingly related issues, which we'll talk about in the near future. So just to mention what they might be. So for example, Minhag, what is the role of Minhag in allowing for variability in the rules of Hezek Riyah? And what about Chazaka, which the Rush talks about in this piece, also in this siman, and it's a major issue also, right? The fact that something has been allowed to go on without objection. So does that change the landscape? Or if I have allowed something to happen and haven't said anything about it, so does that take away my rights to object? So on the surface, these are three interconnected issues. We'll see that there are variables in them, but on the surface, they all seem to revolve around these same elements, right? To what extent is the issue of Hezek Riyah subject to the victim being okay with it or to circumstances making it okay? So Chazaka, Minhag, and Mechila. So having talked about Chazaka and the Siman, we could just look at the end. So he talks about why the Chazaka is a more complicated point, why he's not so ready to jump into that, but just to read together the last few lines of the Rush. He says, Avalim yesh edim shamachlu hashutfin zeloza al hezek riyah. Let's say there are witnesses that the two partners were mochel each other on the hezek riyah. Shuv en yachol enachzabahan. So then, okay, they're committed. They cannot reverse themselves. Af alpi, even though you learned Bava Kamma, and you know, Shaymer lechaver krok susi b'shaver kadi, yochel achzibay v'yischayev chaver bezeko achshachazibo. Right, even though that if I initially told you that you could break my stuff, and then I changed my mind, I have the right to come back to it. So here, this is different than that. Shiny hachi, d'tfias mamon yesh b'nehem. So here, this is different. That there is a monetary demand one can make on the other. Sh'nischayev kol echad l'chavero l'sayo b'binyan hakosel. Each one obligated themselves to the other to assist in the building of the wall. So this is more comparable to a debt. That if I borrowed $100 from you and you told me it's okay, I don't need it back, you can't come back next week and say, actually, I do need it. Right? In that case, you can't change your mind once you say you're mochel, you're mochel. So there, the person who would have owed you, so he is zochah through the mechila. So it's comparable here. So it's a very interesting perspective on Hezekria. Right? He's basically saying that what it boils down to is a monetary obligation. That just like I borrowed money from you, so I owe you money. So too, I moved in next to you. We made a deal to build a wall together. And we owe each other our portion of the wall. So just like you can be mochel on my debt, we can be mochel on the obligation we have to each other to participate in the building of the wall. So how does that strike you in light of what we've seen so far? Is that surprising? Is it not surprising? Do you feel that that's what you would have guessed? So maybe we'll leave you on a cliffhanger. So there are many who raise the following question. They say that, and many of the Achronim really struggle with this rush for this reason. This is the way that they articulate the issue. That he says, okay, this is basically a monetary bill. Right? That by sharing our space, I made a commitment to pay for half of the wall. You're meichel. It's no different than your meichel on the money I borrowed from you. So the Achronim ask, but how could that be true? The wall is there because of the reality of Hezekria. And whatever you said before is not going to change the fact that the Hezekria is going to be ongoing. So just like if I said to you today, it's okay, you can break my computer. I don't need it anymore. You can take it apart and learn from it. And then I decide an hour later, you know what? You can't. I actually do want it. So that I can do. I can reverse that. So why shouldn't that be true here as well? There's the constant reality of the fact that you'll be mazik me with your looking at me. So I could be mechel today, but the fact is that tomorrow the reality is still going to be there. So that's going to create every day. There'll be a new creation of the need for the wall. So who cares that last week you said that you're okay with that one, but tomorrow there's a new reason for it. So, you know, we don't want to make too much of a cliffhanger because it'll be a little bit before we get a chance to explore further. You probably have to say that, yes, that's all true, but there's still a space between the Hezekria and the obligation to build the wall. That the motive for the wall is the Hezekria, yes, and that does not go away. But there is a rabbinic enactment to build the wall as a response to the Hezekria. And that rabbinic enactment is placed on the neighbors together as a monetary obligation. And they can decide how to handle that any way they want. But yes, the reality of the Hezekria is not going to disappear. So I'm just giving that brief answer so you should be able to sleep at night, because also you all got to preserve your health in these circumstances, and we don't want you to be too tortured between now and then. But preserve a little bit of excitement for further exploring it, and we'll see again how it also impacts on these other issues of Chazaka and of Minig. Okay, so far so good. Everybody with me? All right, so just to quickly recap, right, we discussed that Mechila exists before the fact, but certainly after the fact, but Mechila exists before the fact also, but there are various sources which draw a line between damage to my property and damage to myself. and coming from two places. One, the lack of sincerity, and two, just the ongoing reality, which may make a person say, I just can't handle it anymore. And that affects a lot of things. And we talked about the Purimspiel, which seems to be highly surprising that it should be tolerated and encouraged in our yeshiva because you're making fun of great rabbis. And to say they're machol is important, but probably not enough for those reasons that we just discussed, that the mechila may very possibly not be genuine. It's a very strong reality. And even if it is, but maybe it may be something that is not going to last. So here too, one could assume that all is relevant to the Hezekiah question. So the question is, we see is going to affect mechila and chazaka and minig and all these related things. So we just got into the rush that the rush seems to say, after discussing technicalities about chazaka, but if you have edim that is actual mechila, that mechila would take effect. But it's like being mechil on a debt that somebody borrowed. And the question was, how could that be? It's motivated. All the achronim say it's still motivated by the hezekiah, which is a reality which is ongoing. And how does mechila affect that? And one Band-Aid approach for now is to say that yes, the Hezekiah is still going to be there, and Mechila does not work for that, but there's a detail here of the rabbinic enactment to have the wall to address it, and that doesn't necessarily have the same aspect to it, then perhaps Mechila could work. All right, you should daven mincha, and everyone who is ill should have a refuah shleima b'karov. Everyone who is not ill should be careful to stay healthy and to protect himself and take every measure necessary. And Bez Hashem, look forward to seeing you soon. Should be
Amen.
Amen.
Have a great day, everybody.
Have a great day.